I am Gillian Strain, and welcome to the Go Health Podcast. So we are in season 3 of the Go Health Podcast, where we are exploring the topic Together We Flourish. In this season, we are looking at all the positive ways that people combine health and faith, and we've got an amazing lineup of super interesting people for you. Now, we've chosen this topic, Together We Flourish, as it's at the heart of the Go Health community, and indeed all the work of the Guild, because our vision is to see flourishing communities made up of flourishing individuals. And the Go Health community is a place of faith, sharing, learning, and practice where we actively tend to our journeys towards health and well-being. All for just £4 a month. You can be part of this network and community. Now, in this episode, we are exploring that theme, Together We Flourish, with Will van der Hart. Will is an associate vicar in London and director of the Mind and Soul Foundation. He's also a coach, a sought-after speaker, a mental health first aider, and he is passionate about empowering others to look after their emotional health. And he's just published a book called Mind Fuel with someone you might have heard of, Bear Grylls. So in this episode, we chat about the writing of that book with Bear, and it might surprise you how they did it. So it's super interesting to listen to, and why they're both willing to share in this new book their own struggles, both of them, in order to help others, and where we can all find support and inspiration to be honest about our mental health and find ways to increase resilience. I've read the book and it is dripping with positivity, but also integrity and honesty about real life. Oh man, I really enjoyed chatting to Will. I always do. I've known him for a few years. He's fantastic. And we get into some really tough stuff that he's gone through, like severely damaging his back and a serious mental health crisis following trauma he experienced, and his ongoing work to keep healthy in a day-to-day way. But he does all the sharing with real grace and humor. Listen, I'm smiling just thinking about our podcast conversation, because he is a super inspiring person. He's really funny, and he just like drops wisdom all over the place, just everywhere. So listen, I really hope you enjoy this episode. Let's go. So Will, thank you so much for giving us your time on the Go Health Podcast. How are you today?
Really well, Jean. Thank you so much for having me on. Exciting.
It really is exciting because this is our third season of the podcast, and this season our theme is Together We Flourish. And so you're like the first person that came into my mind about somebody who's really tackling Christianity and faith and living in a positive way. And you've got a huge background, of course, in helping people address mental health. You are an associate vicar in London. You co-founded and direct the Mind and Soul Foundation. You're also a coach, and you're an author, and you've just had a new book out, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. So just bought a new book out just last month, October, called Mind Fuel. It's really a co-write with Bear Grylls, which is quite exciting. And so it's been a fascinating journey this last season. We've made it up to, I think, 56 on the Amazon bestseller list. So that's pretty good, out of a couple of million books. It feels quite exciting to get up there inside the top 100. Hopefully, just reaching a new audience with the emotional health material.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm so pleased to hear it's going well. So can you tell us, where did the idea for the book come from?
So I was writing a devotional on mental health, and, you know, I do regularly spin through articles on my Soul Foundation website, and the ones that people pick up a lot from me are a sort of light theological entry into text, exploring the kind of emotional mental health connotations. So I thought, I'll do a 30-day Lent book or something like that, a sort of journey through mental health in the New Testament. And I'm friends with Bear Grylls, which I've known him for probably 10 or 12 years now. We met through another mutual friend, and another friend who's a writer said, "Oh, I heard that Bear was wanting to write a sort of devotional, like Soul Fuel, his 365-day kind of Bible study guide, but around mental emotional health. You should chat to him." So anyway, I messaged Bear and said, "Hey, I hear on the grapevine you're thinking about this stuff, and I've already started something. Do you want to chat?" Bear's often away, so, you know, you might not hear anything. But within 30 minutes, I had a phone call from him saying, "Will, tell me what's going on. You know, this sounds brilliant." And we had a really exciting conversation around the topic. And he said, look, I just, all the work I've done with the sort of forces and contacts through the film industry, so many people I know are just struggling with the basic stuff, but not everyone wants to talk mental health, you know, and it's sort of particularly chaps. It seems to turn a few guys off. So he said, what could we do? Could we collaborate? And so that's how the idea was formed. And I think we were commissioned in mid-February and we'd done the right by the end of July. So it was quite a fast project, but it was really fun to do. So it's 365 days of emotional resilience.
Yeah. And normally when people come on the podcast and they've written a book, I usually read the book before I interview the person. And I started reading this well. I actually didn't want to rush it. So I'm only up to day 40 or something like that, because there's one sort of challenge a day and it's broken down into 8 different areas: wisdom, battles, motivation, courage, relationship, self-care, determination, and spirituality as well. So tell us about the writing process. Did you like climb a mountain and hang out in it? Write it or whatever.
I think it was Russell Brand who said, you know, trust Bear Grylls to write a book around a good book about mental health that everyone can read. He probably wrote it hanging upside down from a tree by his private parts, anyway, or language to that nature. So no trees were climbed or mountains were scaled at my end. I mean, lots of people assume that Bear sort of quite disconnected from the writing process. Actually, he's a really good editor, filled with ideas. And every day we actually use WhatsApp. It's the first time I've ever done this, but sort of scoping ideas for 2 or 3 readings a day, very early in the morning, and then WhatsApping backwards and forwards to put readings together. Not a single word went through without Bear reading it, scrutinizing it, challenging it. It's quite tough sometimes, you know, some ideas of mine completely canned, but brilliant. And it was really fun. I think I've probably got about 3,000 WhatsApps from Bear over the period of writing together. And he's a great editor as well. I mean, just really sharp. And so we bounced stuff backwards and forwards and then popped it into an online box for our editor to then review. And it was hard because we wrote quite long form, because we were writing about 400 words. And then our editor was out with the kind of knives, carving it down to about 275 words. So, you know, there's always a pain when you're writing, because you were just like, oh, I love it all. And actually they're like, no, we want it to be sharp, digestible, a page a day, really hold people's attention. So yeah, but happy with the result as far as it can be.
Yeah, it is. And so this is not a paid promotion, but I've been really, really moved. So on some days, actually, I found it, and I consider myself such a fairly spiritual person, done a lot of this area stuff, but I'm finding it really challenging in a good way and really positive. And I've been fascinated by Bear Grylls. I read his autobiography, Mud, Sweat and Tears, which is about his journey from breaking his back to climbing Everest, with a whole lot of other stuff like his childhood in it. And I was struck particularly at the end of the book, when he gets to the top of Everest, that for him, that challenge, climbing a mountain, which is awesome, physically hugely challenging, was also a spiritually healing moment as well. And I just want to read a little bit. So he gets to the top of Everest, you read most of the book at this point, and he's there. And he said, you see, ever since that hospital bed, I had wanted to be fixed physically and emotionally. Heck, ever since boarding school, age 8, all those years, I wanted to be fixed. And right here at 29,000 feet, as I staggered those last few steps, I was mending. The spiritual working through the physical, mending. Which I think is a beautiful description of healing. That difference between being fixed and being healed as well. And what we can take through the faith, we would often say. But this is him finding spiritual healing through physical challenge as well, which is interesting, isn't it? And part of what's gone into your book.
Yes, so much part of his journey is encountering the spiritual and the physical. I mean, one entry is quite funny, which I was kind of like, oh my goodness, can we even put this in? He kept saying, oh, I like to like hug trees, Will. And I was like, okay. You know, sometimes like I touch a tree and I just say thank you. And I'm like, okay, that sounds, it's like, but it's been there for such a long time and it's just doing such a good thing. And this sort of connection he has to nature and just being grateful for being alive in it and sort of grateful for all of its working. There's a very strong sense of presence that he has. And I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, still has persistent back pain. He has to work really hard physically to kind of keep himself in good shape, to sort of stave off the pain. And that motif of kind of being present and mending is very much a core part of who he is. I mean, it's helpful also to know he's just a really genuinely lovely guy. I know people think with these celebrity types, you know, that they're sort of all glossy and lovely on camera, and then they kind of get off and actually they're not like that in real life. Bear is actually lovely. I mean, I've been away with him and, you know, we've met abroad and done some Christian kind of holiday things together. And what I've noticed about him is he just always has time for people. And he genuinely is the warmest, most enthusiastic person in the room, which is great. And it's great. You know, I couldn't tell you how in the writing process, you know, I wrote, like I said, 160 emotional health entries with him. And then you're thinking, oh my goodness, I've got 200 more entries to write. Like, think about that for a minute. That is a lot of unique topics to like come up with. But he was constantly like enthusiastic and encouraging and like, this is great. And always deferring praise to others. Like, oh, thank you. That was so brilliant. Oh, I love that idea. And that's hard to do at 5:30 in the morning, you know.
I think also what I'm struck by in his writing, not only in this new book you've put out with him, but his other stuff as well. The challenges are seen as opportunities for growth, and that there's something really healing about engaging in challenges. I have to say, I went through a really difficult time after my second child. I suffered really badly with depression, and I was on Samaritans, and I was really, really quite ill. If that happened to me now, I would have gone to the doc. I would go to the doctor, but I didn't back then. And I thought, I'll just try to think my way out of it. Come on, Gillian, I'm a priest. I'm a spiritual leader. I should not be feeling like this. And I gave myself a really hard time. So a heap of shame on top of it, which is another topic you talk about in the book. But it was actually one of his other books, the one you mentioned before, Soul Fuel, that helped me as well and challenged me to get back in my body and start running and be more physically active, actually. Because I think in Christianity, so often we, you know, you have to find healing through having a good cry about it, or silent prayer, and we miss the healing that can come out from just getting back into our bodies and challenging ourselves a bit, can't we?
It's so much. And I mean, I found this, you know, we had quite a lot of interesting conversations, of course, because I broke my back in 2016 and suffered from this thing called Cordura Equina syndrome. I didn't do it parachuting in the desert. I blew it up on a trampoline with my kids, but having done years and years of rowing. But this sort of feeling of, I think what that did for me, we both work our pain through physically, through sort of endurance activity. And when I lost my back mobility, I sort of struggled then because I couldn't do what I could do before. And, you know, it's easy to discount your physicality, particularly as you're getting older. And you sort of almost put physicality in the sort of enthusiasm of youth and, oh, you'll learn, you know, when you kind of get all creaky and crunky. Actually, Bear's really, he really sort of inspired me to get back in my body again, you know, just through his enthusiasm. And that, you know, it's so Platonistic, this whole idea, you know how Plato denigrated the sarx and, you know, then the psyche was sort of tolerated, but what he really loved was the pneuma. But we still have that in society at large, you know, we're still so Platonic, and particularly in the church. The body is largely ignored and, you know, and yep, diminished, but, you know, we're there elevating the spirituality and the intelligence. I just think the incarnation means something. You know, the fact that the word became flesh and moved into our neighborhood means that actually being fleshly and physical matters. I think in writing the book, you know, I try to cycle every day, but I'm just really sort of engaged with my body more and thought, okay, this is a gift. And I'm in whatever level we're able, yeah, to be mobile and celebrate our bodies and move our bodies, it's good for our minds and for our spirits. And I think the danger of professional exercise and of maybe if the sort of the Bear icon idea is that those of us who haven't got a body and a six pack that looks quite like that, or those of us who maybe are carrying a little bit more weight than others, or those of us who maybe have, you know, physical disability or some sort of physical challenge, can discount ourselves from being physical people. But actually, you know, we've all got a body, whatever its shape or size or ability, and moving that body and celebrating that body is an important part of our emotional health and well-being.
Absolutely. And there's lots of new science coming out, which sort of almost proves what the Bible tells us. We were created mind, body, and soul. And science, you know, to a couple of thousand years, it's just sort of catching up in terms of how we keep stress in our body. So when things go wrong, and if there's a problem or we suffer a trauma, that can somehow get trapped in the body as well. So there's a lot of healing that can happen through a physical therapy when that kind of things happen. But our bodies are really wise as well, aren't they? Our guts are lined with brain cells. We might say, oh, I felt it in my gut. We have this. We can actually discover a lot about the world and about ourselves and about God even through our body.
Yeah, it's got a few mantras, which are quite funny again when they come through on a WhatsApp at 6 a.m, you know, saying never give up, you know. But also trust your gut is one of his key phrases, you know, trust your gut. I mean, I think we've all seen books like Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, you know, The Body Keeps the Score. There's a lot of sort of reference and interest in the idea that our bodies can really talk to us and tell us, you know, more about our environment and ourselves than we maybe would give them credit for. I was coaching someone yesterday who's, you know, very sort of very anxious at the moment, but just helping them to think about the fact that their body responds and reacts to their environment well before their mind appraises it. You know, if you're stepping into the street and a bus is whizzing up the hard shoulder, you go into reverse well before you'd ever realize there was even a bus there. It's only when the bus has gone past that you go, oh my goodness, I nearly died. And so all of that stuff that our body is attuned, you know, into our limbic system, how it responds, and it's aware of itself well beyond we're consciously aware of it. It's so powerful, but it makes so much sense. And then, of course, when you experience traumas and, you know, your body keeps the score, listening to your body and the tension within your body and the reactions of your body is a really great insight into what's going on. I think we've become far too cerebral and far too inattentive to our bodies. But that to say, I mean, mindful isn't all about having a cold shower and romping around in the woods. So, you know, it's a physicalism is a part of it, but it's not all about getting out there in the physical.
And yes, because in the Pray Safe for the book, there's a real focus on those internal battles in the mind that can stop us going forward and stop us going to sex. So there's a big focus on mental health in the book as well, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there is. That said, I think, you know, the mandate that we had, the excitement we had was, I think, having sort of been running Minor Soul Foundation for the last 16 years, that to a level, the mental health literature space is relatively saturated. I mean, most people know about mental health. Most people are interested in mental health, buy books on mental health. I mean, I've got shelves of mental health books. I'm like a mental health junkie. And I think people like me probably have got no reservations about engaging with, thinking about, listening to, reading things about mental health. But in the world out there, I think there's still a significant number of people for whom this stuff is disinteresting, woolly, disengaging, not something they want to engage with at all. And as a result, those people are then potentially more vulnerable when they do face battles of life, because they haven't got any of the sort of structures or understandings or frameworks to be able to manage those emotions. So Bear and I actively trying to engage in disengaged marketplace where mental health is concerned. And so we actually sort of coined the phrase, it's not too cheesy, of sort of mental fitness, which is this idea of actually you can be physically fit, you'll still get physically ill. I mean, everyone who's physically fit suffers from physical illness. You can also be mentally fit. That doesn't mean you're not going to struggle with mental illness at some point or other. But mental fitness is this healthy self-awareness of how we work, how we process, how we have maybe particular biases within us that can limit us. We have family of origin stories, which might lead to hard beliefs that stop us from making progress in life. So understanding ourselves and keeping short accounts with ourselves, you know, keeping processing, keeping our emotions alive, you know, sharing, talking, collaborating. So we hope that, and it sounds like a stereotype again, I hope it isn't, that maybe young men who are down the gym all the time and saying that mental health will never touch me might pick up this book. We hope that a lot of the middle-aged men that I coach who've got huge amounts of success but a very small amount of happiness might think, oh, that's an interesting book I could read on the tube without too much embarrassment. So we've definitely diluted mental health as a sort of primacy and gone for something that's hopefully accessible to people who might react to that label. Obviously, as you know, I've got a mental health condition. So for me, as someone who suffers from GAD, like, I have no reservations about talking about mental health, but thinking about people who would find it hard to, they're the people we've really written this book for.
Sure. And GAD is generalized anxiety disorder, just in case people haven't heard about it. So, and thinking about those people, so that bloke on the tube going home after a long day to a life he's not happy with, or that bloke in the gym as well, what do you think the obstacles are that have stopped them up to this point until they get your book, right? So, but what are the obstacles?
You're very kind. I mean, again, like, bear with me if I said the book was only for men. It's definitely not. It's for women too. But if we take the stereotypes, actually, which is interesting, I think the Daily Mail were like, oh, you know, various Twitterati were saying that all the old, you know, they're bringing out all the old tropes around sort of mental health thing, and, you know, about men who don't understand themselves. But look, it's not true, but the statistics for male suicide remain the same. 4,270 people died by suicide, I think, last year. Of that, three quarters were men. And the greatest risk age is 50 to 57. Mm. So, you know, you tell me what correlates. The reality is that I've got to be honest with you, as someone who went to public school, the greatest dysfunction I see is in often private school educated men in their 40s to 60s. who've had very little socialized experience in childhood, who have had very little opportunity to dilute their emotion in any way, and who've got no sort of modeled emotional framework, they go after success and actually they get it, but don't have the opportunity to work through those emotional experiences, you know, within themselves. And they're often told, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and crack on, you know, and look good. And when you feel bad, you know, you don't know what to do with it. So this is light touch, you know, it's definitely light touch. But the hope is through encouraging people to recognize basically emotional turbulence is normal and actually universal, we can begin to provoke conversation between men. And the greatest challenge facing men today is isolation. It's the feeling that I've got to keep up appearances. I was coaching a guy, I remember a couple of years ago, 60-year-old guy, unbelievably successful. And I was, you know, the classic coaching question is, what do you want? So I was like, look, what do you really want? He said, like, I just want to hold on to retirement and then I can be myself. I was like, what? What do you mean? He said, like, I just want to hold on to retirement and then I can start being myself.
Wow.
I'm like, wow, what have you been doing for the last 40 years? Like, and the reality is anything but being myself. You know, we have a crisis of emotional health and well-being in all generations. But I think when I talk anecdotally to men in that generation, I'm thinking we have big problems. And you know, there are problems, as we all know, around domestic violence, which, you know, is a real sort of epidemic, which is unseen. And so much of that seems to be linked to, you know, obviously there's all sorts of elements to what domestic abuse means, but the men who are emotionally aware and don't go to the football, get super angry, and then come home and beat up a family member, are what we're looking for. What do you do with your emotion? What do you do with anger? What do you do with your discontentment at work? I know, you know, that the statistics around football, you know, the loss of a football team and domestic violence are horrific. Like, what is wrong with men that we have not, you know, that men would turn their emotions into violence against the people that they love? I mean, these are all questions I'm asking. I'm not saying we've got the answers to them, but I just think anything we can do to open up emotional conversations for people who aren't having those conversations, it's got to be a good thing. You know, this book isn't a state. Like, if you've got a mental health problem, don't read Mind Fuel as the answer to that problem, please. Go and, you know, see a psychologist, get the medication you need, read a great book by a psychiatrist or psychologist. This is the book I'm hoping people will give to their teenage sons for Christmas. Plug, plug, plug. Yeah, but you know what I mean? This is the book I hope a guy would read. 365 days of readings around, actually, it's okay to feel like that. And actually, it won't stay. Like, there's a way of working around this. There's a way of getting through this as a way of opening up.
Because these are huge chronic problems. I mean, that story you just told about the man who wants to be himself in the last few years before he dies is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And they're real questions of identity as well. I mean, can we be ourselves or are we our work? These are huge problems I think we're dealing with. I'm always struck when I do healing service as well, and you're sort of struck with a sea of faces and everyone looks very Church of England, mostly, you know, white and neat and all together, you know, and thinking about dinner or drinks party or whatever it might be, and then they come up for healing and in the confidentiality of that space tell you the most heartbreaking things, not necessarily great tragedies, but sometimes, but often I'm just so lonely, or, you know, I can't forgive myself for something many, many years ago. And these are huge things as well that we're talking about. And I've really struck in the book as well that you helpfully provide icons. So if you're interviewing you on podcast, you can just look up all the spirituality ones to find out what you say about the faith, but dealing with, you know, big hitting topics like shame as well that we carry around, which is huge, isn't it? And it almost seems still quite taboo even to talk about in safe church spaces, isn't it?
Massively. I mean, shame is like, Rob and I wrote The Power of Belonging as our real offering around shame. But I'm so glad I wrote it. It was in a way a bit of an exhaustive book. So it's not done so well because you can't help but go deep with shame. But I think writing it really made me feel convinced that at the root of so many of our ills, mentally and emotionally and relationally, shame is sitting pretty. You know, it's that one of the earliest human emotions. I think Darwin suggested that shame was at the heart of the human condition, seen as shyness in babies because they would turn their face away from the non-parent, whereas other animals would come out and, you know, hang out with the other rhinoceroses or the other giraffes or whatever. But human babies would turn their face away from unknown adults. straight away. And that sort of shame or shyness was like an intrinsic part of who we are. I mean, I think maybe that's what original sin really looks like, is this sort of otherness that we feel from a very early stage. It's certainly at the heart of so many of the issues we face. And we all have that sense. I mean, imposter syndrome is another thing that we deal with in the book. And it's so prevalent today, this feeling of I'm not good enough. And I'm sure that social media has exacerbated the problem significantly. And I've got a 13-year-old daughter who is heavily, she's a sweetie and she really is sort of grounded. But, you know, TikTok and, you know, Instagram and all the stuff, it's hard. It's hard not to feel like you're just not good enough. And then needing to sort of project an image that you're better than you really are. Whereas at least in history, when there was only sort of a town crier, you wouldn't necessarily know what vegetables the next door village were growing. It's a hard world of comparisons, and we've got to address it.
It's absolutely huge, I think. You know, when we used to come home from school, you know, you shut the door and you were safe. And now the mobile phones mean you're still interconnected to a world that can be ever so cruel. And of course, Bear is a superstar and he is sharing his story, but you do the same as well. And you mentioned earlier, you have a generalized anxiety disorder and you talk about it quite publicly. And I remember, Will, the first time I met you, we were in some mental health meeting or something in London and you made a quip about it. I can't remember. We were talking about some project and you said you were anxious about it, but you would be anyway. And I remember being struck by your sharing that in the room, how it changed the dynamics of the room when one person was willing to share. We're all professionals talking about mental health, but you shared your own condition and it changed the dynamic of the room in a really important way. And I've seen that through my ministry. Well, I talk about either having cancer or suffering from depression. Suddenly, everyone wants to tell their story as well. And something happens in a room about which can be deeply healing as well. So this is in the same way we can all do that bit of sharing, can't we?
Yeah, I mean, again, the healing power of story is so underestimated. And I think like that idea of mending versus then healing that you pointed out earlier is really important. And we're mended in community. We're mended in tapestry, in a way, every one a thread. And together we create a better story. I suffered from a quite a dramatic anxiety PTSD-style breakdown in 2005 after I was involved in assisting in the London bombings at Edgware Road station. And, you know, I had a real choice in my life at that point. It was, you know, I getting calls as I started to talk about mental health from other more evangelical leaders, one of whom said, look, if you keep talking about mental health, you're going to ruin your ministry. You know, people are going to call you the mental priest. You just need to be quiet about it. And I was in this sort of quandary. I thought, I can either go back in my box and just pretend this was just like a bit of tiredness and mild burnout, or I can start talking about mental health. I just thought, I'm just going to get out there and start talking about it. And weirdly, now if people call me the mental priest, I quite like it, you know, but it was a funny season. And I just thought, it's got to be better to be vulnerable and to be real than it has to be pretend, you know, to carry a pretense and hide. And I'm so glad I did, Julian, because, you know, if you'd said to me at that age and stage, I'd spend most of my ministry talking about mental health, I would have run 1,000 miles. But now I just think, you know, isn't it God's providence that God used that experience that I had to begin having conversations about mental health, which have actually been useful for some people and offered some help in the church. It's been an interesting journey.
Amazing journey. Thank God for your ministry as well, because tackling real taboos actually within church hierarchy and within our communities, because they can be so we've got a big project, well, as you know, called the Healthy Healing Hub Project, to make every church a place of health and healing for the whole community, helping them discern what God's calling them to do, helping them work with a multi-agency, and then getting in experts as well. So we're not a mental health charity, but we know some great ones like Mind and Soul that we can promote and point people in the direction of. So it's that kind of thing. But I quite often, if I'm feeling brave or I know the church well, I'll say, great, you want to be a healthy healing hub, but is this a healthy place? And you can see everyone beginning to shift in their seats, and then there'll be a bit of a titter at the back because they know the real story kind of thing. And I think there's some challenge that needs to go on there. And if we're going to be if we're thinking as communities or even individual Christians, if we want to offer health and healing to other people, we have to look at our own, sort of get our own house in order, as it were. And that's not about being perfect in any sense. I think it's more about being open as well about the problems and just being realistic, speaking the truth, which sounds like what you've been doing over the last few years and certainly through this book.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think that's right. Just getting the conversations going and breaking down barriers between people. You know, I think I hope the church is more inclusive, you know, these days, and actually that people who previously wouldn't have felt welcome feel welcome across every denomination. And every kind of style of Anglicanism. And for me, that's been mental health. It's been, you know, actually, if you suffer from serious enduring disorders like schizophrenia or schizoaffective disorder or bipolar disorder, if you suffer from neurotic disorders like depression or anxiety or OCD, that you feel that there's a place for you at the table, and actually God welcomes you. And, you know, it's amazing how, I think, how divided or how excluded people felt from the church in many ways. And yet Jesus, you know, in my experience, always came first to the sick and offered the first welcome, you know, almost in every room, offers the first welcome to those who are unwell. What a gift to just lovely to see people who felt excluded from the family of faith being welcomed back in again. I'm grateful to all of the Anglican leaders I meet as well, and, you know, the bishops, for the change of culture that I think we've probably both seen over the last 10 years around this topic. Just to, you know, I'm so grateful to see such an interest in areas of mental health amongst clergy and a willingness to kind of engage, and also for more organizations who are participating well in the space to try and resource people to support those and enfranchise those in their communities who might be struggling in that way.
Absolutely. It's good to see positive, it's things going positive as we move forward. But I can just take you back. You mentioned, you know, some quite serious mental health conditions like schizophrenia, chronic health conditions and things like that. People who live with, you know, really big piles of rubbish in their lives that they have to go through. I mean, the book aims to help people develop a positive mindset and break through obstacles that limit success in everyday life. It's a really bombastic statement, right? And it's great. But what about the really serious stuff, Will? What does success look like if you're notwithstanding a miracle? We all believe that might happen, but notwithstanding that, right? If you're dealing with something really awful and you cannot see a way through and there's no medical hope of change, what does success look like there?
Well, I think there's two ways to answer this question. The first one is that we're only ever looking at success in terms of our own capacity. Like, the purpose of Mindful was not that we benchmark success and become more impressive than others, but actually that we live with the fullest capacity, you know, with our fullest capacity as far as we are able. So I really hope that people who maybe have physical disabilities would not feel turned off by what we write in Mindfuel, but would recognize that whilst they can't climb the mountains that Bear Grylls can climb, they can live with, you know, they can find success within their capacity. We talk about creating green spaces, very like trying to describe people's windowsills. If you live in a tenement block, you know, and you've got a windowsill, start green gardening. So you look out of your window through plants rather than straight through concrete, you know. So we have in mind, what would success look like if you don't live up a beautiful mountain in Switzerland somewhere? Like, everyone has their stuff. And I'm not wanting to diminishing anyone who's dealing with a really kind of rubbishy rubbish of life. But within every limitation is also an opportunity to find success. And we're really inspired by people like Nick Vujicic, who's got no arms or legs. I was with an undertaker recently and we were talking about gratitude. And he said to me, he said he was from Trinidad. And he said, we were talking about the issues of gratitude today. He said, I used to feel poor because I had no shoes. And then I met a man who had no feet. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, and he was just sort of, you know, it was just a moment. I was just like, well, I was really arrested by that phrase that he used. And I was thinking, you know, whatever our limitations, whatever our hardships, there's always success to be found, you know, in living our fullest life within the constraints that surround us. Now, some of those constraints can be overcome in this life and some of them can't, but none of them can diminish our capacity to live within them well. And, you know, I think in such a comparative world where success has almost become externalized measure and applauded or approved of by a kind of big crowd, we can lose the reality that there is a way of living every day with gratitude, serenity and application, which is still fulfilling. And I've met a number. I mean, I'm friends with Sharon Hastings, who has a psychotic, lifelong psychotic disorder, and she continues to battle psychosis. Is an incredibly inspirational writer, an amazing mum, and just a force. And I think, comparatively, I definitely think, man, I'm so glad I don't have psychosis. That's what I think. She's probably thinking, I wish I didn't have psychosis. But she does. But with the constraints of her life, is she successful? Oh, boy, yeah, she is so successful. But, you know, she has really distinct limitations that she has to enact in order to stay living well within her lane. But she's living that life. And I think, you know, hopelessness comes from believing that someone else's success should be ours. But hopefulness comes from identifying the success that we're living or the decisions that we can live in to find that success. And yeah, I mean, I'm just working through a dear friend's journal who I'm sort of toying with. She agreed to sign over to me before she died so that she was like, let's do something with this will, you know? So I was just been reading it this week. You know, she was 43 when she was diagnosed with inflammatory breast cancer. I buried her last year. I was just inspired by her successful living, you know, throughout a heinous season of treatment and operation and just illness, sickness, nausea, you name it. We blew some champagne at her funeral because she was like, I said she couldn't do like a recording where she told everyone, like, because it'd be too freaky. But she basically, like, she just lived it full, you know. She was on the sun lounger floating in the middle of a pool in Nairobi about 3 weeks before she actually died. Like, you know, life is filled with limitations and hardships, but that doesn't mean we can't live.
I meant to pop into Waterstones before we chatted to see where your book was. Was it in the self-help section or the faith section? I haven't looked because what really struck me with what I've read, and particularly, well, looking at the Christian sections, the spirituality sections as well. And I'm sure you've noticed because you wrote the book, right? But in all the sort of challenges you bring up under the spirituality sections, whether it's a challenge around shame or a challenge around burdens that we carry or a challenge around being bold in this life in the name of Christ, almost all of them came with good advice that has something to do with connecting to others. And I wonder if that's why this book should be more on the Christian stuff bit rather than self-help, because it's not an individualistic book, certainly not in the Christian spiritual things. And I'm curious, given that our podcast sort of season titles Together We Flourish, there's something about the togetherness of, you know, muddling along as Christians with all the rubbish life throws at us. The togetherness is some of the healing bit that's to be focused on in a positive way.
Yeah, and I think that really, I mean, one of the things about Bear, again, that's super inspirational, is Bear, he just celebrates team. Like, he constantly celebrates team. I mean, even if you follow him on Instagram, you see as many, if not more, any post that he actually posts himself, his team don't post, will be pictures of cameramen. I think there's one today, a cameraman, you know, or a camerawoman up a cliff somewhere. Just my great team. And our world is fractured and individualistic in so many ways, but together we're stronger. Now, obviously, writing a book, we wanted to write a book that, you know, Bear could read in the children's cancer ward without, conflict, or we hope that maybe that that people of other faiths and religions would enjoy reading too. We hope that we would engage with men and women in the mosque, and as well as maybe in the church. And so we've tried to write the spirituality sections. They are written from a distinctly Christian perspective, but we've tried to write them in a way where the wisdom could be accessed and interesting to people of other faiths, but also reflecting our belief in the power and presence of Jesus, and acknowledging that the community of faith or discussions around spirituality are a great starting point for us all to find better health of mind. And I think the piece of spirituality and religion is sort of should be cut off from the mainland. It's a kind of niche interest topic. It's like cutting off your leg and saying your leg is a niche interest topic compared to the rest of your body. We are, I think, intrinsically physical, mental, and spiritual. And it would be completely remiss of us not to include a spirituality element to a book around emotional health and well-being. And, you know, I would love it if people felt more free to be able to ask questions about faith and spirituality and ask each other, you know, across faiths and across denominations and across backgrounds and assumptions, like, what's this mean to you? I guess anything we can do to, yeah, express welcome and invitation and celebrate questions and togetherness around faith and the spirituality is got to be a good thing.
I think so many people see our church buildings as places that's not for them. I noticed that during the Queen's death. I live at Lichfield Cathedral, and we had thousands of people coming into the building who'd never been before. But there's some kind of twinkle somewhere that said, this is a type of place that does death. We should probably just go there. And that was a huge moment. But I think so much more of it is doing stuff outside of church buildings. Just, you know, you just never know where these conversations are going to happen, you know, in the cereal aisle of a supermarket, or maybe particularly in nature. I'm embarrassing about being in the, I think there's something particularly interesting and about being in the wilderness and in the spaces of nature that you sort of forget about yourself and discover God type of things going. So doing that kind of thing is really important.
Yeah, that's right. We did a bit on the Desert Fathers, you know, the kind of like to strip it all back, get out and like just encounter God and, you know, under the stars. Yeah, I mean, I had a really great conversation with my mum and dad the other day. They're really strong Christians, and my mum was clearly a bit worried. She was like, you know, it's quite secular, Will, you know, like it's not very much in there about Jesus, and bless them. I think they were a bit worried. I think they maybe were like going to sort of bring some sort of intervention and like pray for me that I was sort of, you know, I still love the Lord, but there are so many barriers to people both talking about mental health and also encountering Christian faith. And we want to write a book which is like comfortable for people to say, actually, that's interesting. And there isn't a huge spirituality section to the book, but I hope there's enough to at least initiate some conversations. And that, yeah, that it's believing God isn't weird. You know, well, I don't think it's weird anyway. So we just wanted to provoke that natural conversation and say, actually, look, you know, if every book that we write as Christians is flooded with Christianese and we're writing for the approval of a Christian audience, then we're never gonna really express to the world what we believe and maybe the good sort of core of what Christian faith is really about.
Yeah, I love that you said there a couple of times that word conversation, and that conversation comes with it openness, curiosity about the other person, holding a space for stories of rubbishness and goodness. You know, it's so much about conversation. And also, I think we need to be really bold. I mean, God can look after God's self, right? The message of the resurrection is good. It doesn't really need us. What we need right now in the world is good communication and marketing, actually. So the message is good. Getting it out there as well is really important. And, you know, this book certainly does. I'm looking forward to the other 200 and whatever many days.
You're very patient, Gillian. Thank you.
But finally, Will, thank you for being on the podcast. I wonder if you could just tell us as we begin to end, what helps you to flourish in day-to-day life? What helps you to get by? If anyone's listening today, having a bit of a tough day, maybe some things triggered for them by what you said around mental health. What helps you to flourish? What bit of advice can you leave us with today?
Always try and have a little laugh every day. Just, I always love a little levity, just a little bright side, you know, and there's always a moment, there's always something you can, there's just a little humour to be eked out of every day. And so often I find it's the people in the darkest places who bring the best humour. So a little levity, you know, any connection with someone you love. And if you're a single person, if you're living alone, just having that call, making that call at the end of the day, or a chat with someone, you know, someone at work. If you're in a family or community, you know, it's a hug, it's a friendly hi, it's time. It's just being you with others. We were never, you know, we were never built to be alone and to carry our own burdens. We were built to be together and to carry them together. So a little levity and a little love every day is sort of I think ministers away a lot of pain. A lot of struggle.
Well, thank you for giving us your conversation today, connecting with us and certainly giving us lots of joy. I wish you huge luck with this book and thank God for your ministry and your witness.
Thank you so much, Gillian.
So that was my conversation with Will. Thank you so much for listening. What did you think? We'd love to know your thoughts, ideas, and how you've been inspired by my conversation with Will. The podcast is freely available to all, but we pick up the conversation in the Go Health community. If you're not already a member, join us. It's only £4 a month. We'd love to welcome you. And we've just opened bookings for our popular Advent course. It's called the Go Health Waiting Well Advent Journey. This year, the Go Health Waiting Well Advent Journey invites you to wait hopefully and with others as we deepen our faith and wisdom this holy season. Each day, there will be an email full of inspiration and practices written especially for you in 2022, augmented with wisdom from spiritual leaders from today and of the past, interweaving scripture and prayer and the wisdom of the Christian faith into each day of Advent. We will together learn how to wait well for the birth of Christ. Daily practices will help us grow in patience and joy, becoming healthy and hopeful at a time that is often chaotic in a world that's full of uncertainty. So it was brilliant last year, and I'm so looking forward to this year's Advent journey. It's free for everyone to sign up. There'll be a link associated with this podcast. Pop over to our webpage where you can find more details. Wendy, thank you for producing this podcast. Please rate and share it. Why not share it on your social media streams? We would want as many people as possible to experience all the conversations, but particularly the one today with Will van der Hart talking about his new book Mind Fuel, written with Bear Grylls. That would be amazing. So in the meantime, God bless. Let's connect and chat. Please join our vision to help flourishing in the world, because together we flourish.